Chapter 7. Queer Lodgings. The next morning, Bilbo woke up with the early sun in his eyes. He jumped up to look at the time and to go and put his kettle on, and found he was not at home at all, so he sat down and wished in vain for a wash and a brush. He did not get either, nor tea, nor toast, nor bacon for his breakfast, only cold mutton and rabbit, and after that he had to get ready for a fresh start. This time, he was allowed to climb onto the eagle's back and cling between his wings. The air rushed over him and he shut his eyes. The dwarves were crying farewells and promising to repay the Lord of the Eagles if ever they could, as off rose 15 great birds from the mountain side. The sun was still close to the eastern edge of things. The morning was cool and mists were in the valleys and hollows, entwined here and there about the peaks and pinnacles of the hills. Bilbo opened an eye to peep and saw that the birds were already high up and the world was far away, and the mountains were falling back behind them into the distance. He shut his eyes and held on tighter.
"Don't pinch," said his eagle. "You need not be frightened like a rabbit, even if you look rather like one. It is a fair morning with little wind. What is finer than flying?"
Bilbo would have liked to say a warm bath and a late breakfast on the lawn afterwards, but he thought it better to say nothing at all and let go his clutch just a tiny bit. After a good while, the eagles must have seen the point they were making for, even from their great height, for they began to go down, circling round in great spirals. They did this for a long while, and at last the hobbit opened his eyes again. The earth was much nearer, and below them were trees that looked like oaks and elms and wide grasslands, and a river running through it all. But cropping out of the ground, right in the path of the stream, which looped itself about it, was a great rock, almost a hill of stone, like a last outpost of the distant mountains, or a huge piece cast miles into the plain by some giant among giants. Quickly now, to the top of this rock, the eagles swooped one by one and set down their passengers.
"Farewell," they cried, "wherever you fare, till your eyries receive you at the journey's end."
That is the polite thing to say among eagles.
"May the wind under your wings bear you where the sun sails and the moon walks," answered Gandalf, who knew the correct reply.
And so they parted, and though the Lord of the Eagles became in after days the king of all birds and wore a golden crown and his 15 chieftains golden collars, made of the gold that the dwarves gave them, Bilbo never saw them again, except high and far off in the Battle of Five Armies. But as that comes in at the end of this tale, we will say no more about it just now. There was a flat space at the top of the hill of stone and a well-worn path with many steps leading down to it, to a river, across which a ford of huge flat stones led to the grassland beyond the stream. There was a little cave, a wholesome one with a pebbly floor, at the foot of the steps and near the end of the stony ford. Here the party gathered and discussed what was to be done.
"I always meant to see you all safe, if possible, over the mountains," said the wizard, "and now by good management and good luck I have done it. Indeed, we are now a good deal further east than I ever meant to come with you, for, after all, this is not my adventure. I may look in on it again before it is all over, but in the meantime I have some other pressing business to attend to."
The dwarves groaned and looked most distressed, and Bilbo wept. They had begun to think Gandalf was going to come all the way and would always be there to help them out of difficulties.
"I am not going to disappear this very instant," said he. "I can give you a day or two more. Probably I can help you out of your present plight, and I need a little help myself. We have no food and no baggage and no ponies to ride, and you don't know where you are. Now I can tell you that you are still some miles north of the path which we should have been following, if we had not left the mountain pass in a hurry. Very few people live in these parts, unless they have come here since I was last down this way, which is some years ago. But there is somebody that I know of who lives not far away. That somebody made the steps on the great rock, the Carrick, I believe he calls it. He does not come here often, certainly not in the daytime, and it is no good waiting for him. In fact, it would be dangerous. We must go and find him. And if all goes well at our meeting, I think I shall be off, and wish you, like the eagles, farewell wherever you fare."
They begged him not to leave them. They offered him dragon gold and silver and jewels, but he would not change his mind.
"We shall see, we shall see," he said, "and I think I've earned and already some of your dragon gold, when you have got it."
After that, they stopped pleading. They took off their clothes and bathed in the river, which was shallow and clear and stony at the ford. When they dried in the sun, which was now strong and warm, they were refreshed, if still sore, and a little hungry. Soon they crossed the ford, carrying the hobbit, and then began to march through the long green grass and down the lines of the wide-armed oaks and tall elms. "And why is it called the Carrack?" asked Bilbo as he went along at the wizard's side.
"He called it the Carrack because Carrack is his word for it. He calls things like that Carracks, and this one is the Carrack, because it is the only one near his home, and he knows it well."
"Who calls it? Who knows it?"
"There's somebody I spoke of, a very great person. You must all be very polite when I introduce you. I shall introduce you slowly, two by two, I think, and you must be careful not to annoy him, or heaven knows what will happen. He can be appalling when he's angry, though he is kind enough if humoured. Still, I warn you, he gets angry easily."
The dwarves all gathered round when they heard the wizard talking like this to Bilbo. "Is that the person you're taking us to now?" they asked. "Couldn't you find someone more easy-tempered? Hadn't you better explain it all a bit clearer?" And so on.
"No, yes, it certainly is. No, I could not, and I was explaining very carefully," answered the wizard crossly. "If you must know more, his name is Bjorn. He's very strong, and he is a skin-changer."
"What? A furrier? A man that calls rabbits conies when he doesn't turn their skins into squirrels?" asked Bilbo.
"Good gracious heavens, no, 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 no," said Gandalf. "Don't be a fool, Mr. Baggins, if you can help it. And in the name of all wonder, don't mention the word furrier again as long as you're within 100 miles of his house, nor rug, cape, tippet, muff, or any other such unfortunate word. He is a skin changer. He changes his skin. Sometimes he is a huge black bear. Sometimes he is a great, strong, black-haired man with huge arms and a great beard. I cannot tell you much more, though that ought to be enough. Some say that he is a bear descended from the great and ancient bears of the mountains that lived there before the giants came. Others say that he is a man descended from the first men who lived before Smaug or the other dragons came into this part of the world and before the goblins came into the hills out of the north. I cannot say, though I fancy the last is the true tale. He is not the sort of person to ask questions of. At any rate, he is under no enchantment but his own. He lives in the oak wood and has a great wooden house, and a man, he keeps cattle and horses which are nearly as marvellous as himself. They work for him and talk to him. He does not eat them, neither does he hunt or eat wild animals. He keeps hives and hives of great fierce bees and lives most on cream and honey. As a bear, he ranges far and wide. I once saw him sitting all alone on the top of the Carrack at night, watching the moon sinking towards the misty mountains. And I heard him growl in the tongue of bears, "The day will come when they will perish and I shall go back." That is why I believe he once came from the mountains himself.
Bilbo and the dwarves now had plenty to think about, and they asked no more questions. They still had a long way to walk before them. Up slope and down dale they plodded. It grew very hot. Sometimes they rested under the trees. And then Bilbo felt so hungry that he would have eaten acorns if any had been ripe enough yet to have fallen on the ground. It was the middle of the afternoon before they noticed that great patches of flowers had begun to spring up, all the same kinds growing together as if they had been planted. Especially there was clover, waving patches of coxcomb clover and purple clover. There was a buzzing and a whirring and a droning in the air. Bees were busy everywhere. And such bees! Bilbo had never seen anything like them. "If one was to sting me," he thought, "I should swell up as big again as I am." They were bigger than hornets. The drones were bigger than your thumb, a good deal, and the bands of yellow on their deep black bodies shone like fiery gold.
"We are getting near," said Gandalf. "We are on the edge of his bee pastures."